How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 140 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review. Once you're on that page, also find us on audioboom.com as well. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Recording this one for Tuesday morning. The Thunder fell to Indiana 93-90. I'm recording this one late Monday night following the game in Indiana. I'm not in Indiana. The team is in Indiana. One of the few road games I'm missing. I will be at their next road game, which is at Washington a week from Monday, a week from today, on February 13th, day before Valentine's Day. Tonight, though, Thunder fall 93-90. Russell Westbrook, 27 points, 18 rebounds, 9 assists. He was stuck on those 9 assists for a while. Almost got number 10. Definitely could have gotten number 10 on a pass to Victor Oladipo with under a minute to go on a play that could have tied the game with the Thunder down 3. He found Oladipo in the left corner, and Oladipo just missed a shot. His shot was off a lot of the night. So Westbrook comes 1 assist away from triple-double, number 26 on the season. Steven Adams, 15 points, 9 rebounds. Andre Roberson, double-double, 11 points, 11 boards. Second game in a row, he's at a double-double. Paul George had 21 for Indiana after shooting just 1 of 8. I think it was 1 of 8 from the floor in the first half with Andre Roberson guarding him. Let's just get straight to Twitter questions right away. First one from friend of the show and many-time guest, most recent guest. All these shows have blended together for me. Was John Hamm on the last podcast? Did I record with John Hamm yesterday? I don't know. This whole season, every single day is the same. I don't know what day of the week it is. I don't know what month it is. I don't know what the date is. I don't know where I am. I wake up on the road sometimes. There have been a couple of scenarios which I've kind of woken up in the middle of the night, and for not like the entire time, but for about 5 seconds after waking up, I have this moment of, wait, where am I? What city am I in? I don't know, especially in that January when I was traveling like crazy. That happened in New Orleans. I woke up and I thought I was in Utah. I was like, where am I? I could not for the life of me remember where I was. I could have sworn I was in Utah, and I wasn't. The NBA schedule is weird. Anyway, so I don't remember if I had John Hamm on yesterday or not. I think I did. Regardless, he's got a question. And it's very, very detailed question. Here it is. Third quarters. Why? So the Thunder got outscored 32-18 in the third quarter in Indiana. They were up 11 at the half. And if you can do math, you'll know that they trailed by 3 at the end of the third quarter. And you have trailing by 3 at the end of the game, too. That third quarter was really the biggest difference in the game. There's no question about that. The Pacers shot 30% in the first half. Obviously, that wasn't going to last, no matter what a team is offensively. And the Pacers have been a really good offensive team over the last month and a half or so. They've been one of the better offensive teams in the league. Came into this game winning winners of 13 out of 17. Now they're winners of 14 out of 18. They've got about a 110 offensive rating, which is really, really good. About a 110 offensive rating over that stretch. Since December 29th, actually, coming into this game, they had a top 10 offense over that stretch, which is really, really good. They shot 30% in the first half. That wasn't going to last. There was no way that was going to last. But it's not like the Thunder just played a really good offensive quarter and the Pacers got a little bit hot. They shot 7-25 in the third quarter. They turned it over 7 times. Pacers were getting out running. They were getting in the rhythm of their offense because of it. They just crushed them in the third. And this is not an isolated incident. They played an okay third quarter against Portland. They won that quarter by 4. But against Memphis on Friday, they really struggled. They lost the third quarter by double digits. They ended up winning that game because Russell Westbrook scored the last 15 points of the game and scored 19 in the fourth. Could have used 19 from him in the for a third straight game on Monday, I'll tell you that much. But he still, Westbrook still played one of his better games. This was not on Westbrook. It was on that third quarter. You know, you go back, Chicago, they give up 39 points in the third quarter to Chicago. Their third quarters have not been strong. My guess, I mean, there can be things that make you not play well in third quarters, but over such a small sample, it's hard for me to say that, like, not playing well in third quarter specifically for four or five games. Because let's not forget, they did, like, a week and a half ago, play maybe their best quarter of the entire season in a third quarter of that game in San Antonio when they went on that 22-2 run, which was super impressive. 22-2 run in the third against San Antonio when they were down, I think, 17 at the time, and they ended up going up three. They lost that game. They got crushed once Russell Westbrook came back out and they couldn't recover. If I recall, Russell Westbrook was a +8 in that game. But they played a really good third quarter in that game. So it's not like this thing that's been killing them for such a long time. Their third quarter numbers on the season aren't crazy. My guess is it just happens to be happening in the third quarter. Look, also specifically on Monday night, this is the second night of a back-to-back. They traveled on Sunday. They probably watched the end of the Super Bowl when they got in because that game was ridiculous. And how could you not watch the end of the Super Bowl when you get in after that? You know, it's the second game in a row that you're playing. You're on the road. You're playing in the hotel. Like, these are the types of games when you crap out in the second half. You play a good second half or a good first half, and then you kind of fall off in the second half. That tends to happen when you're on back-to-backs. They didn't necessarily play a terrible game in this game, but the third quarter really hurt them. The sloppiness in the third quarter really hurt them. The lack of shooting in general hurt them, but let's be real. That's just going to be a theme, right? It's been a theme all season. It's going to continue to be one. Russell Westbrook was 4-10 from 3 in this game. The team as a whole was 7-28. So everybody else was 3-18. Victor Oladipo was 0-6. He was 4-16 from the field. Mora went 0-3 from 3. LaVerne misses only attempt. Grant went 1-3. Bane was 0-1. Brinas hit a couple. He only played 8 minutes. Under 8 minutes, 7-44. Mora got 14 in this one. I wasn't at this game. If I read this game, I would have asked Billy about the rotation minutes with Abrines and Morrow. Because Abrines has been shooting well. It's not like Morrow has a defensive edge on him. Abrines got a DMP in the last game, too. So I wonder, it's something that I'm going to ask Billy about with the Abrines minutes, why he's managing them out the way he does. I know Billy rarely has a consistent rotation. But I really am curious as to why Abrines is not getting those minutes, because he's been knocking down shots like crazy, really for a month and a half now. He's been shooting an incredible percentage from three. It's something the Thunder need. He hit two threes. He took two big threes in the second quarter, and he barely saw the floor. I wonder why that's happening, and I wish I could give you guys an answer. I know it's the reporter's job to ask these questions and find this stuff out. I wish I could give you guys an answer right now. I will be able to give you an answer. At least I'll be able to tell you what Billy is saying. There's going to be no practice tomorrow, but I will ask that question on Wednesday. And I will try to find out exactly what the logic is in the Abrines decision there. But as for the third quarter specifically, it might just be bad luck. I feel like this is just going to change any day now. Because it's not something that's been a common theme all year. Remember early in the year, they were getting killed in second quarters. Now it's third quarters. It's probably just bad luck all stringed together. But we'll see. Maybe if you guys have any theories, please send them my way. Because it is consistent for about four or five games now. They are getting crushed in thirds. So if you have any theories, tweet them at me, at Fred Katz. I would love to hear the theories on what the heck is happening in the third quarter. Next one from Sarah. What brought about this change in Andre Roberson? He seems so much more confident and is playing really well the last two games. Yeah, he is. So Andre Roberson had 11-11. He had 14-11 on Sunday against Portland. Back-to-back games with a double-double. Put that in perspective. Coming into Sunday, Andre Roberson had one career double-double. He had a double-double a couple of years ago. Now he's got two in the last, like, 36 hours. So Andre Roberson's putting up some numbers. He's getting boards. Playing the four a little bit more, I think, helps. I think he looks more active offensively when he does that. People talk about Andre Roberson's got to be more active. Look at how much better he looks when he's cutting. But here's the thing. I don't love it when people say that because it makes it sound like it's just a desire thing. It reminds me when people say, like, look at how good he is on defense. Look how hard he plays on defense. which obviously in order to be good on defense, you got to play hard on defense. But people say defense is all about effort. It's not all about effort. That's silly. If defense were all about effort, then I'd be a lockdown defender in the NBA because I would try really hard. I'm not even a lockdown defender in pickup games. I promise. Watch me play pickup. I'm not. But, like, that's not what it is. Defense is not about effort. Defense is about smarts. It's about team defense. It's about length. It's about athleticism. It's about foot speed. It's about knowing where to be. It's about knowing where to go in pick and rolls. About understanding team coverages. It's about fundamentals of just whether it's on ball fundamentals, whether it's verticality, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. There are a million different things that go into defense in terms of skill and smarts and just physical ability. And people say, well, Andre's just got to be more active as a cutter. That makes it sound like it's just effort. It's not just effort. I think the prototype for Andre Roberson is Matt Barnes. I really do. Matt Barnes is one of the best off-ball cutters in the league, and he's especially good at basket cutting. He's always been really good at that. He's really good at knowing when to basket cut, and it's not because he's active as a cutter. He can be active as a cutter when the team calls for it, when the offense calls for it. But you don't want a guy who's just relentlessly active as a cutter. You don't want a guy, so like Andre Roberson cutting to the lane during this game. Then you have having to turn around and scurry away because Russell Westbrook was driving and he didn't realize it. And he brought another defender into the lane when he cut. You don't want that. That's relentlessly active cutting. You don't want that. You want the guy who knows when to cut. And I think Roberson, for whatever reason, when they're playing small and the floor is spaced, maybe it's because there are fewer people cutting. There are fewer people in the lane. I don't think it's necessarily when he plays the four or whatever it is because he's more comfortable with the four. I think he's just more comfortable with floor spacers around him because he's not a floor spacer. So I think there's just a little more room for him to cut. Like, let's be real. When you don't have floor spacers, people talk about how it hurts penetration. It also, you know, it hurts driving lanes, all that stuff. It hurts post-ups. It also hurts ability to move around the floor. It hurts those cutters. I'd still like to see him as a more active off-ball screener. I still think that would be important because when guys aren't guarding you, setting off-ball screens can be really effective offense. When guys aren't guarding you, it's what helped them a lot during that Golden State series last year when Roberson was a lot better offensively. That being said, I get Sarah's point. Like, he does look more confident. And I hate playing body language doctor, but, like, he does. Like, there are a couple of plays that he never would have attempted on this, you know, January road trip when he was struggling like crazy. Maybe he needed a couple of home games to get back at it. It's the first time they had consecutive home games since December. February 1st and 3rd, that was the first time they had consecutive home games in a month and a half. And Andre Roberson is notoriously better at home than he is on the road. Maybe he needed a couple of home games just to get back with it a little bit. But like a couple of, look, he had a great dunk against Portland. An awesome dunk. That one from the right elbow where he went off the dribble, right dribble, two steps, slam it home. Great dunk. He said that was his best dunk since college. It was a great dunk. It was the best dunk I've ever seen him have. Until Monday, when he had an even better one, which he also took a guy off the dribble. Then he had another play where he took Paul George off the dribble, went left, and finished a lefty layup. Two dribbles to the hoop from the right side. Like, I'm not saying that Andre Roberson is going to be a guy who all of a sudden is 11, 13 points a game. That's not at all my argument here. My argument here is that, like, when a guy does something well, and then he does another thing well, that can snowball. Just like when a guy does something poorly and another thing poorly, that can snowball too. Roberson may just be a snowballing player. And maybe he needs that little jolt of confidence. He gets a couple of things that are going well, and all of a sudden, he feels like he's able to put the ball on the floor. Now, he's not going to be able to do that all the time, especially not against good defenders. But if it's something he can work towards, still a young guy, if it's something he can work towards to be able to at least slash every once in a while, Matt Barnes, offensively. Think Matt Barnes. If he can Matt Barnes cut, which is easier said than done. You can't just learn how to be a really good off-ball cutter. But it's not like Andre is this low IQ player. He's smart. He's a smart dude who, when you sit down and you talk basketball with him, that dude has a great basketball mind. That's why he's a really good defender. He's a really good basketball mind. He's really interesting to talk about defense with him. And I think that can transfer intellectually to the other end of the floor. So I think he's capable of developing that part of his game. I really do. But he's not there. But just think Matt Barnes. If he can Matt Barnes, and I really think that's the prototype for him. If he can turn into a Matt Barnes type, he's a better defensive player. If he can turn into a Matt Barnes type, that's a really valuable player. From JT Lynn, is Payne on the verge of hitting the bench? Is Kristen going to see any more minutes? Yeah, another bad game from Cameron Payne. So Payne finished this one 1 of 4, 13 and a half minutes. 3 rebounds, couple of assists. He was a -1. The biggest problem for Payne so far, though, and it's been, 15, 16 games or whatever it is. The biggest problem for Payne so far, I'm just going to ignore the numbers because it's not like Samaje Kristen has these all-world numbers, although he's a pretty good defensive player on the ball. But ignoring the numbers, I'll buy into the fact that when a guy is missing shots, he looks bad. When he's making shots, he looks good. Doesn't necessarily mean he's playing great or playing poorly. To me, the biggest issue with Cameron Payne right now is his inability to initiate the second unit offense, especially in a timely fashion. So often, the Thunder get the ball at the top of the key to Payne, and Payne kind of stands there waiting for a screen, waiting for somebody to get off and open. And there's just not enough motion within the offense for him to do that. He has to initiate this. I mean, he's got to call for that screen. And look, the Thunder, look, someone's got to come up and set it too. It's not just on him. LaVert has to come up and set a screen. Oladipo has to get himself open. Like someone else, someone needs to set a pin down for somebody. Like someone's got to cut. Like guys tend to just stand there in the second unit. And I think they're still figuring out how to gel without Enes Kanter because he was doing so much in the second unit from a facilitation standpoint. But there's so many possessions in the second unit where Payne gets the ball at the top of the key. Oladipo kind of does the same thing, but not quite as much. I wonder if we're going to see Billy Donovan stick. We talk about people have asked, and this is not, drinking tea is not the only person to ask, like, hey, when is Samaje Kristen going to end up jumping in? I don't think Payne is going to lose his spot in the rotation. I don't. Maybe eventually. Maybe, look, if he's shooting 32% from the field by the end of February or beginning of March, maybe that happens. But I don't foresee that happening. I don't think that's, this thing that's going to happen in the very near future. I really don't. I think they want to develop Cameron Payne. I think that's going to happen. If they had, some great players sitting behind them who they were, dying to develop, then that would be one thing. But I don't think they feel that strongly about Kristen. I think they like Kristen as an NBA player moving forward. But I don't think he's somebody who they think, all right, this is a guy with a really high ceiling. Let's see how he can do if Payne is not working out right now. I don't think that's going to be the case. But I wonder if Billy Donovan will eventually go in a direction where Victor Oladipo is the sole point guard in the second unit. You put Anthony Morrow and Alex Abrines out there at the 1 and 2, at the 2 and 3. Maybe you shorten your rotation. You put Andre Robertson instead of one of those guys, and you run up with a bench unit with those guys. I wonder. And I wonder with Steven Adams playing more minutes with the second unit now, I wonder exactly how that's going to help too. Look, it's hard to do. They've played with so many different types of second units. There's so many different identities. It's really hard to say, like, all right, Steven Adams is out there now. Let's completely change the way we play for the night. It's not a thing that NBA teams do. It's hard. It's really hard to gel like that. But that being said, I do think there is a point. Like, Cameron Payne's not infallible. We saw Billy Donovan pull him out of the rotation a little bit last year. And I think it's possible that it could happen again this year. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime in the immediate future. And I don't think it should happen at any time in the immediate future. I think their goal should be developing him. Should be seeing exactly what they have in him so that they know for sure what they have in him. Even if he's struggling in the short term. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there to follow team coverage. And you can see what's next for the Thunder on that page. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow. Supposed to have a guest on tomorrow's show. The Thunder don't play again until Thursday night when they play the Cavaliers. So no game stuff tomorrow. Just going to be talking generic Thunder podcast. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.